The following paid program is furnished by Dr. Steve Pettirudi. It's for basic entertainment and informational purposes only and is solely responsible for its content. It does not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, its management, or its staff. News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO presents Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pettirudi. Join Dr. Pettirudi as he guides people towards living the 120 lifespan while retaining youth. He'll apply logic, reason, and scientific evidence to address conditions that drain people of their joy and vitality while protecting people from the harmful aspects of conventional medicine. Now, here's Dr. Steve Pettirudi.
Good morning. It's a beautiful day out there. Thanks for tuning in. Shannon, it's just a great day to live to be 120. What do you think?
It's always a great day to live to be 120.
Why not? You know, if you had a choice between living to be 60 or 80 with great vitality, what would you pick? How about 80 to 120? Well, we're going to be talking about that today, some elements of it. And we're going to be talking about the revolution in medicine that you are living through in the moment, though you may not even realize it. Think about medicine being broken into three waves. The first wave, let's call it apprenticeship. This was the era where a young man or woman, typically a young man, would follow around a learned doctor, a learned healer, to learn all the tricks. Now, that lasted for thousands of years. Then came the scientific revolution and the scientific method and the rise of evidence-based medicine. In the early 1900s, medicine became more organized, became more scientific. In some ways, it became more effective. In other ways, it began to lose some of its art. The third wave is now upon us. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm afraid to report the bureaucrats are winning. They've taken that evidence and they've distilled it into pathways, into bureaucratic channels of care. Do you ever notice lately when you go to see your doctor how there seems to be as much attention given to the computer as to you? They're looking at the screen, they're banging at a keyboard. The time pressure is immense. The freedom to converse about the issues at hand are very limited. There's a reason for that. It's not because your doctor loves that approach. It's because they're being compelled to drive into this pathway of care. You see, a lot of smart folks have gathered much evidence about how to manage health conditions. And they've put them into recommendations, pathways, intended to help doctors to be a guide. What's happened is that the bureaucrats, the accountants, and the businessmen, the insurance companies, and the government have taken those pathways and have petrified them into a straitjacket of required activity. Your doctor has to click boxes in order to be validated as keeping up. It doesn't necessarily address the problems you're having. That's why we're introducing this revolution. We call it intellectual medicine. And thanks for being a part of it by listening in. Intellectual medicine applies evidence, reason, and thought to solve difficult problems. Evidence is different than proof. I cannot give you absolute proof that you can live to be 120. We don't have that study out there yet. However, it doesn't mean we should fail to take action. We have ample evidence. The evidence is out there in the form of scientific studies, in animal studies, in cellular information. We know cells are designed to live to be 120. Why can't we live just as long? This is because you've got to break outside of the straitjacket of bureaucratic medicine. So here's a question for you. How do you know if your doctor is practicing an intellectual style of medicine or is bounded by bureaucracy? There are a couple of tells you can gather. One of the biggest is that they've been in trouble with the insurance company for spending too much time with their patient. That's right. Insurance companies frequently audit doctors, and if the doctor's not moving fast enough, seeing enough patients, if they're ordering too many studies in the opinion of the company, they'll get pushback. So that's one tell. The other is that they were asked to leave or chose to leave a large bureaucracy. Vertical integration may be good for selling burgers. It's not so hot for representing individual interests when it comes to medicine. When you're in a vertical integration, it means that your doctor is answering to authorities above him or her regarding who they refer to, what studies they order, how much time they spend. Once again, time is of the essence. The doctors get paid for units. And you, ladies and gentlemen, have become a unit. That is, the more units you move, the more validation you get. intellectual medicine requires time to think. If your doctor spends extra time, that's a good sign. If your doctor's independent, that is, doesn't even subscribe to insurance companies, that's a very good sign. If your doctor's had pushback because of creative attempts to treat difficult problems, your doctor's had hassles because you try to treat Lyme disease or chronic fatigue. I mean, what's the cure for chronic fatigue? I haven't found one. Well, we do have solutions, but conventional medicine hasn't found one. How about fibromyalgia? Or how about the biggest one of all, aging itself? So we're interested in hearing from men who've been experiencing fatigue, decreased sex drive, decreased sexual energy, decreased mental energy. I'm curious to know how your doctor addressed those issues. And likewise, women, I'm curious to know how they broach the topic of menopause with you. We believe that every man and woman should have the benefit of the full complement of their hormones throughout the entire span of their life. A life lived without hormonal repletion is deprived of its full vitality. Here's what you can write down. This is guaranteed will happen if you don't have adequate hormone support. You'll shrink. Your bones will get thin. Your brain will slow down. Your muscles will shrink. You'll become fatigued. Your sex drive will diminish. Your genitals will shrink. It's not a pretty picture, is it? I mean, if that could be avoided safely, wouldn't you be interested in that? What about the fear factor? Conventional medicine will tell you, doctor, I've been told that hormones give cancer. And there is no absolute proof of that statement is true. In fact, the biggest study showed that there was no increased risk of breast cancer with regard to estrogen replacement. It was strictly with artificial progesterone. Testosterone and prostate cancer, there's a weight of evidence showing that it does not increase prostate cancer risk and may even diminish it. So then why the confusion? Let me draw an analogy to a fire and a forest. Forests are a beautiful thing. A world without a forest would be a pretty bland world, wouldn't you say, Shannon?
I think so.
I think I like forests. Now, do forests cause fires?
I certainly hope not.
No, they don't. They're innocently sitting there growing. They're beautiful. They're green. But if there's a fire burning and you throw a log on it, the fire will get bigger. Think of the forest as your hormones. With them, you're vital, you're lush, you're growing, and you're green. However, if cancer is already present, in some cases, the hormones can add a log to that fire. There's a difference between that which causes cancer and that which may accelerate it. So if you've got breast cancer or you have prostate cancer, hormones can be an accelerant, but they don't necessarily, or they don't, to the best evidence that we can present, cause it. And I think that fear has sacrificed an entire generation of women to the ravages of menopause. I mean, my wife is now studying, Shannon is studying to be a nurse practitioner. She's had the opportunity to see women present with these symptoms. Average presentation is a woman comes in with fatigue, weight gain, a little bit depressed, maybe losing the sex drive. Doctor looks at her, she's maybe 43 years old, says, you know what, I think you're going through your menopause. It's time to replace your hormones. Isn't that what they do, Shannon?
Always.
They do that?
Come on.
What might they do in that setting?
A conventional?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, this is what to expect.
Maybe some antidepressants.
Absolutely.
Maybe give them some comfort. Hey, you know what? This is normal. This happens to everybody. All right. Well, it doesn't have to. Mark me absent. I saw a woman this week, and we were able to watch her lose 20 pounds, regain her mental and sexual vitality, and now start to come off the sertraline, the antidepressant she was placed on for the symptoms in the first place. I could think of another case. A woman came in to see me. She was doing a consultation for weight loss. She said, I went to my doctor because I was depressed. I said, were you depressed because of the weight issue? She goes, yes. I'm 30 pounds overweight and I hate it. So what did the doctor do? Well, he put me on an antidepressant. She said, I gained 5 pounds. You know, the point is, if you treat the problem instead of the symptom, you're going to have a better outcome, a better opportunity to live that best and that longest life. Now, hormones are a cornerstone of living that best life. They must be replaced at the appropriate time to live your longest and best lifespan. But hormones alone are not the full scope of life extension medicine. Think of the hormones as the 2x4s framing the building. It's a great start and it's an essential component. But you need the entire house, right? You need the electricity, the plumbing. That is, you got to have your brain, your arteries. It all has to come together. Well, after our upcoming break, we're going to talk about heartburn and about reflux disease. There was a call that came in last week that we did not have an opportunity to get to the answer. And it had to do with a gentleman who was suffering with what sounded like reflux-type symptoms. Chris, this answer goes out to you. And we're picking up where we left off last week. And also, we'll be in a position to start taking some calls here at News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO. We are the voice of Southern New England. This is Dr. Pedretti with Intellectual Medicine. And Shannon, can you give that number people can call if they have any tales to share about their engagement with their menopausal symptoms or medical questions in general? Go ahead.
Sure. If you're in Rhode Island, it's 401-438-WPRO or toll-free 1-800-321-WPRO, or you can tweet us at Dr. Pedretti.
Oh, that's it, the tweet. Thanks for reminding me about the tweet. So coming up, we're going to be here there every week. This is going to be a long conversation. I hope you enjoy it. I know we're having a ball. But tweet us the topics that you're most interested in hearing about, and we can focus on those in the upcoming shows. We do have on our agenda talking about immunizations, the HPV immunization. Is it a good thing or not? Which immunizations are most valuable and which seem superfluous? We're also going to be talking in upcoming weeks about mammograms. Should you even bother getting them? Do they cause cancer? Are they worth doing? And that's an agenda we're looking forward to upcoming. But I do want to amplify the role of acid reflux with regard to anti-aging. Clearly, there was a time when Prilosec didn't exist. It makes you wonder how we ever lived without it. Seems like everybody in the world is on Prilosec or Nexium or Prepulsid. Not Prepulsid, or Prevacid. These drugs can be helpful. Look, there are places where conventional medicine has made brilliant gains, and one of them is in curing ulcers. When they figured out that it wasn't due to your lifestyle as much as a viral, as a illness, a bacterial infection, they were able to solve that problem. However, in typical American fashion, we took a good cure and we expanded it to an absurd level. So when we come back, we're going to be talking to Bob in Warwick. And then we're going to circle back, Shannon, and talk a little bit about this antacid crisis. I'm Dr. Pedretti. This is Intellectual Medicine. Stay tuned.
Now, back to Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pedretti. Call in now at 438-WPRO or 1-800-321-WPRO.
Hello, everybody. We're back. I'm Dr. Pedretti with Shannon, and this is Intellectual Medicine. We're going to be talking to Bob in Warwick next. Regarding, I believe, a low back pain issue. Crystal, put on Bob. Hey, Bob.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. My question is, I have my L4 and 5, and I must be a pinched nerve because the sciatica, the pain right down to my ankle is just unbearable. And I was just wondering what avenue I can pursue.
Okay, Bob. So Bob has a pinched nerve at L4 and L5, and the pain is going down into his leg. I'm gathering there likely was some imaging study done. A typical pattern with back pain is that the approach, if the therapeutic approach fails, an MRI can be done. The problem, Bob, when an MRI is done is that they are always abnormal. If you're over the age of 30 and you have an MRI on your back, it's not going to be normal. There will be bulged discs. There will be some evidence of arthritis. Now, that doesn't mean that what you're seeing in the picture is causing the problem. So that's one caution. There are cases where there is clear evidence that a disc is banging on a nerve And there's a connection between the back pain problem and the sciatic pain going down the leg. But here are a couple things to be very cautious about. The first, move very slowly, if at all, to surgery. In studies, they've shown that if you can comfort the pain and work through it with exercise and other modalities, the outcome is better without surgery than with it. The limiting variable would be if you're having muscle weakness, like a foot drop where you're tripping because you can't walk properly. In certain cases, surgery does become a little bit more urgently needed. But think of the back, Bob, not in isolation, but connected to everything else, correct? You've got the muscles that surround it. You've got the abdominal fat mass that pulls in front of it. So our approach to low back pain is to treat the whole body. I would be wanting to know, are your testosterone levels optimized? And if they're not, we would endeavor to make it so. Because testosterone builds muscle, which adds strength to all the joints, which can accelerate healing. In our practice, we'll even take a cycle of stimulating your growth hormone if needed. Now, growth hormone can be a powerful accelerator of healing. However, it is not to be used directly for that purpose. Growth hormone cannot be used off-label in any form. But there are things that can be done safely that can boost native growth hormone levels. When you're in chronic pain, the free radicals accelerate and antioxidants can help fight them. The free radicals amplify inflammation and make everything a bit worse. Finally, you have to get, and I would guide you toward getting your percent body fat to its optimum level. You want your percent body fat, if you're a male, our target is to have you 20% or less. For a female, it's 30% or less. If you do all of those things, Bob, and you're still having pain, and I'd say give it a good 3 months of active treatment, strength training, physical therapy, optimize your hormones, drop your percent body fat, and if the pain is still there, that'd be the time to contemplate something more aggressive. One other word, and that is drugs are horrible at treating back pain. Anybody that's been down that path knows it. So good luck with your back pain, Bob, and I hope these suggestions give you some help. We're going to move on now to Albert in Johnston. Albert, thanks for calling. You're talking to Dr. Pedrudi on intellectual medicine. Okay, I seem to have lost Albert, Crystal. Can you hear him, Shannon?
Yeah.
Okay, my earphones aren't working. Oh. Albert, if you summarize your problem, Shannon, you could give me your earphones and I can listen in.
Okay. I have bursitis in my hip and thigh, and I was wondering is what I could do to relieve it. It's not a bad pain, but if I sit for a long time, then it bothers me. So should I be icing it or put a rub on it, or
so
what's the best?
There's bursitis in the hip and the thighs, which you shared with me. A bursitis is an inflammation of a cushioning sac that is on the bone. Anywhere there's a bony prominence on your butt, at your elbow, at your knee, there's a bursa. And the bursa is intended to be a shock-absorbing and a comforting element. When it becomes inflamed, it can create pain. So one of the ways to treat bursitis is to alleviate that which is causing it pressure. In the hip area, that would mean stretching activities. I see a lot of bursitis on the side of the hip. And Bob, when you say your hip, it can be a broad area. But the cornerstone of therapy for bursitis is strength training and flexibility. A physical therapist or a trainer could give you a great direction in this regard. Drug therapy is very limited in its value, particularly drugs like the non-steroidals, Motrin and ibuprofen, do not help this get better. They can help mitigate the pain temporarily. An approach that would incorporate some anti-inflammatories that are more natural, I like curcumin in this setting. It can be a natural anti-inflammatory. Combined with the strength training and stretching. And Bob, once again, you know, the hormones got to be right. If you're losing testosterone, it's going to be really hard to build muscle and flexibility. Depending on other sources of pain, glucosamine and chondroitin may have value. So physical therapy, anti-inflammatories that are natural, and beef up those hormones. And we're going to take another break. We'll be back with more from Intellectual Medicine.
News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO presents Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pettirudy. Join Dr. Pettirudy as he guides people towards living the 120 lifespan while retaining youth. He'll apply logic, reason, and scientific evidence to address conditions that drain people of their joy and vitality while protecting people from the harmful aspects of conventional medicine. Now, here's Dr. Steve Pettirudy.
Welcome back, everybody. Doug, thanks a lot for recovering my fumble. If I were a quarterback, I think I'd be cut from the team right about now for a bad handoff. Well, we're here talking about living to be 120 and about how to have a robust, a great, and a joyful life. Certainly, having heartburn every day is not one of the ways to do that. But tell me, why do you think we have acid in the stomach? Is it just there to get us annoyed? And why does it seem to me that everybody on the planet is taking antacid or proton pump inhibitors? I believe there's been a drift, and I think it encapsulates much of what's wrong with conventional medicine and much of what we need to be doing to live healthier. So here's your scenario. The proton pump inhibitors, when they first came out, were revolutionary. Prilosec changed the face of ulcer treatment. I can remember a time when if you had an ulcer, you'd be in the hospital, you would get surgery, they would cut a portion of your stomach out that contained the ulcer, and they'd cut the nerve called the vagal nerve that produced the acid in your gut. And this was felt to be the standard of care. Not felt to be, it was. Many, many people had the surgery, and surgeons made a living out of this. Then came the revolutionary thought that maybe ulcers are the result of bacteria, and that perhaps we can treat them with antibiotics and antacids. And that revolution changed the face of treating ulcers. So it was a great breakthrough. But as often happens, within this kernel of truth sprouted an entire tree of misdirected care. So if you've got no fooling an ulcer and it gets treated, it's a grateful intervention. But now we have folks that are going to their doctor saying, "Doctor, I have heartburn." Well, guess what? We spoke earlier in this hour about the pressures these doctors are under. They've got 5 minutes to click all the boxes, satisfy the insurance company, look over their shoulder at everybody who's watching them. You're not alone in that room. And by the way, get you out the door so they can see someone else. Well, here, take some Prilosec. Great. So you take it, and what happens? You get better. Not only do you get better, but you find out that you can eat stuff that you couldn't eat before. Typically junk. Typically stuff that's not so hot for you. And the more you eat the junk and the more you take the proton pump inhibitors, as they're called, the less capable your body becomes of processing food naturally and organically. The acid in your gut is there to help you digest your food. It helps kill bacteria. When you obliterate it with the drugs, you increase your risk of pneumonia, increase your risk of osteoporosis or bone thinning, because your body can't absorb the nutrients adequately without the acid being present. You destroy healthy bacteria, altering the bioflora of your lower intestine. That can lead to the leaky gut syndrome, creating more inflammation throughout the body. And as if all that is not bad enough, new evidence has now correlated or shown a connection between proton pump inhibitors and dementia. That's right, Prilosec and other drugs like it, Prevacid, Nexium, you fill in the blank, there are a ton of them out there. Last year, one drug alone accounted for $6 billion of income to the company. Do you think they care about solving the problem? Much better to put a Band-Aid on it. If you're having heartburn, your body's trying to tell you something. Fix the problem. Don't cover it up. Covering it up chronically can lead to increased dementia. The animal studies demonstrated beta-amyloid plaques in the animals exposed to the proton pump inhibitors, and a well-done long-term human study showed increasing dementia. Folks, the evidence is in. Proton pump inhibitors are dangerous. They should be having a black box warning on them for infection, osteoporosis, and dementia. you still want to take that Prilosec and have your barbecue? Listen, there's a better way to go about this. The gut is supposed to work. Things are supposed to move from north to south. We are not born inevitably destined to have heartburn. It's treatable through other means. So when we come back, we have another break coming up. I'm going to describe a couple of the most important elements, and Chris, this is for you, tune in, buddy, on how to solve that heartburn problem and get off your proton pump inhibitors. I'm Dr. Pedroudi. This is Intellectual Medicine. Keep listening and get smart.
Now, back to Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pedroudi. Call in now at 438-WPRO or 1-800-321-WPRO.
And I'm back. This is Dr. Pedroudi along with Shannon at Intellectual Medicine. Thanks for tuning in. So we left off talking about the scourge of proton pump inhibitors and the amplification of pneumonia, osteoporosis, and a host of other problems, including dementia. So what are you going to do? You're stuck on Prilosec. How do you get off? First, you got to put together all the key elements. Raise the headboard. Now, don't put pillows under your bed. That does not work. Get a 2x4, put it up a couple of inches, let gravity be your friend. It'll pull all the juices down into your gut when you're sleeping. Simple to do. If you've got an adjustable bed frame, good for you. Those can be pricey. All you need is a 2x6, put it underneath that headboard, and that'll be helpful. The next step, endeavor to get to your best weight. If your percent body fat as a woman is at 30 or above, a man 20 or above, that needs to be addressed. That will help move things north to south. Third thing, move. The body needs exercise that stimulates gastric motility. Another thing, avoid triggers. They're not the same for everybody. Experiment with them. I can share some of the common ones. Coffee for many people. Now, I love coffee, and it's safe and it's healthy for you, but if it causes heartburn, you might need to modify that. Another one, alcohol. Now, I enjoy alcohol, but if it's giving you heartburn, you may want to reconsider the choice. Different forms of alcohol can affect people differently. In some cases, gluten can be a trigger. Go gluten-free for 2 weeks and see how it handles your gut. Finally, in some cases, dairy products can also be an aggravator. And then the usual culprits. Think junk food. Think hot and spicy. Now, as you modify your diet, start to skip your proton pump inhibitor 1 day per week. And if you're doing well, attempt to advance that. The more days you can skip your proton pump inhibitor, the better it's going to be for your health overall. So what if all that fails and you're one of those folks who just has to be on it your entire life? I believe strongly that you should be getting intravenous vitamin and nutrient support. That will bypass the barriers to absorption in your gut and deliver essential micronutrients directly through the vein into your body to protect your bones, to boost your immune system, and to protect your brain. So those are my tips. I hope that they help some of you out there. And if we be of greater service, just give us a call and we'll expand that conversation. I want to talk a little bit more about the language police and about the effect it's having on free speech in America and free speech when it comes to your health. You realize your doctor is being censored in the manner in which they can speak. Certain words aren't allowed. I can share with you, remember this, Shannon, auditors came to our office, and we have a sign there that says, Life Extension Medicine, don't we? It's a beautiful sign. We have that sign. Well, why not, right? That's what we're in this business for. So it was an insurance auditor and looked at the sign. Do you remember that?
I do. Because we couldn't believe that he was serious.
That's right. What did he tell us to do with the sign?
Take it down. It's gonna confuse your patients, your clients.
Take down that sign. I said, sir, should I replace it with a sign that says life shortening medicine? Would that be more satisfactory to you?
He didn't find that funny at all.
He was not amused.
No.
He was not amused. The point is that they were literally critiquing our use of language, saying we don't pay for that. Furthermore, if you keep using that language, we're gonna make you pay us money back. Because it's unapproved. Well, that happens every day in doctors' offices. They are liable to be stifled in their conversation, even if they believe in some of the things I'm sharing with you on air here. Now, you need to find the proper source. You need to do your own research. You need to be your own advocate. I'll share with you the story of the Kind Bars. Shannon, have you ever heard of Kind Bars?
Of course. They're everywhere.
And what are they? They're...
They're fruit and nut bars.
Fruit and nut bars. Seems pretty innocent. Well, the Kind Company made it their objective to produce healthy snacks, and they put on the label of their snack the word healthy. The FDA sent them a warning letter telling them, in essence, cease and desist. You cannot use the word healthy. We, the FDA, control the word healthy, and you're not allowed to use it. Think about that. You can't use it. Whatever happened to free speech? Now, I'm not here to tell you the bars are healthy, but I'm here to advocate for the freedom of doctors to express themselves, the freedom of people to use language in a manner that they see fit. Now, when we come back after the next break, we're going to talk about why Kind Bars got a letter from the government telling them to stop using certain language and why that is a threat to all of us, especially little guys like me practicing intellectual care, intellectual health. All right, we'll be back after this break. I'm Dr. Pedruti. You're listening to News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO, the voice of New England.
Now, back to Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pedruti. Call in now at 438-WPRO or 1-800-321-WPRO.
And we're back again. Thanks for listening. It's a beautiful Saturday morning, and we're all in it to live life to be 120. So by now you know you're getting on your hormones, you're getting off your proton pump inhibitors, and should you eat a Kind bar? Well, according to the FDA, they are not allowed to use the word healthy. At least that's the letter they sent to the company. Cease and desist. You are not healthy. And the company looked and said, hey, yeah, we have fat in our bar, but it's the healthy kind of fat. Now, the FDA has identified certain elements of food as being healthy. Now, I'm using those quotes and quotes, healthy. They base it on information from 1970, folks. That's how fast the FDA moves. In the 1970s and 1980s, fat was evil. Remember that? Fat was bad, and therefore you had to be low fat to be healthy. Well, guess what? That was never true, and now we know it's not true. And now we know that the low fat movement did more harm than good. It turns out that replacing fat with carbohydrate was a recipe for disaster. Increasing obesity, increasing diabetes, there's absolutely nothing healthy about swapping out your fat for carb. And yet, that's the standard at the FDA. Well, when they sent this letter to the Kind Company, the company responded by getting some leading nutritionists to support their claim that, hey, we've got healthy omega-3 fats in our bar, we've got healthy nuts in our bar, nuts are high in fat, but it's the good kind of fat, the anti-inflammatory kind of fat. And they were able to get the FDA to push back. Now, why does it matter to you listening in your car, at your radio, at the beach? Why does it matter what happens between the Kind Bar Company and the FDA? Because, folks, they can do the same thing to any one of us at any time. Any doctor, any nurse practitioner, any businessman that has a temerity to put the wrong label on a package can get a letter from the FDA. You know what? If you're the Kind Bar Company and you've got $50,000 and you've got a legal team ready to go, all right, you can fight back. What happens if you're Joe Average and you're sitting in your office and you're telling patients that, you know, it's healthy to have omega-3s and you get a letter from the FDA? Or what happens if you're a small startup company trying to change the nature of food availability in America? Remember, big companies first establish their success. Then they turn to the government to quash competition. And they use regulatory agents to do some of their dirty work. The FDA has no business telling you what's healthy. They should cease and desist their ignorant intervention on trying to decide how to label products. How do you know what's healthy for you? Well, you educate yourself. You know, if you're underweight and you're striving to keep your weight up, maybe fat is good for you. If you're battling obesity, there's no such thing as healthy fats is too much abundance. My point is that what's healthy for one person can be unhealthy for another. And the government should not have this blanket power. Remember the food groups? That was another joke. Remember the food pyramid, Shannon?
Of course. Bread, 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 cereal.
Was it bread? Was it
grains. That was the bottom.
That food pyramid turned out to, again, harm people. Why? Because they're trying to manage things from the top down. The revolution in medicine, the revolution in intellectual medicine, is coming from the bottom up. It's coming from people like you, the listeners of this show, who are taking this information, doing your homework, and then trying to direct your care. When you go to your doctor and you ask questions, intelligent questions, and your doctor puts down his computer or her computer, looks at you and says, "That's interesting, let's talk about it," sign him up. That's a doctor who's leaning towards intellectual medicine. If the doctor looks over the computer and says, "Are you trying to tell me about medicine? Do you realize I went to medical school, don't you?" Find a new doctor. That's somebody who's petrified and simply wants to be dogmatic. Intellectual medicine requires that open exchange. What's healthy for one person is not necessarily healthy for another. In intellectual medicine, we find problems to issues that the dogma can't solve. Obesity, solved. Menopause, solved. Sexual dysfunction, solved. Now, next week, folks, we're going to be talking about sex and the aging human. What's normal? What should you expect? What can be done in order to preserve this essential element of human function? Remember, I'm Dr. Pederuti. We operate out of the Pederuti Center in Warwick, Rhode Island, where Shannon and I make it our business to change lives every day, driving people towards their best self, your best weight, your best energy, your best brain function, your longest life. Why not live to be 120? Why not make that your goal? Why not feel better, stronger, faster? If you've been told that this is just aging and you just need to adapt, you need another opinion, because age can be treated. There's no such thing as age being responsible for feeling bad, folks. I have people in my practice in their 90s living a thriving life. Well, next week, tune in. We're down to our last few seconds. This is the Pederuti Show, the intellectual medicine with Dr. Pederuti and Shannon. We'll see you next week. We'll be talking about sexual health. Thanks, folks, and goodbye.